Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. It's our match day 24 recap. The season is starting to fly by now, isn't it? I'm your host, Matt Clark, and I'm joined by Rory Barlow. We're not in Barcelona together this weekend, alas, but we are here virtually on Zoom to discuss the weekend that was in La Liga. Rory, how are you? Still basking in the glow of seeing Barca live last week?
Yeah, I mean, Barcelona did their best to sort of take that glow away. alas, we aren't in a terrace in Elborn, because that was a bit of a nicer setting than my flat. But yeah, it was a good weekend in La Liga. The Late Late Show in plenty of games. I feel like this weekend there was lots of tantalising moments to really get our teeth stuck into, so to speak.
Well, let's get on and do that. First up, we have to start at the Wanda Metropolitano, Saturday night, Partidazo, Atleti against in-form Getafe. Quique Sanchez-Flores was returning to the stadium, where he was, of course, was manager about 10 years ago, winning the UEFA Cup and Super Cup. He was back, Getafe a banging form. How would Atleti get on? Well, it was quite the show. Here's Jeremy Barron from Into the Calderon.
A balón parado, el Getafe con 11, el Atlético con 10, marca hermoso, Atlético de Madrid 4, Getafe 3.
I'm now joined by Jeremy Barron from Into the Calderon, and we're here to discuss what was an absolutely crazy game at the Wanda Metropolitano on Saturday night. 4-3, Atleti were winners, but that doesn't even tell half the story, does it, Jeremy? First of all, just describe your emotions and let's try and unpack that game.
Yeah, a real roller coaster, another shootout. Atleti have been involved in several of them this season. And I kind of had gotten so used to the 1-0 and the Uno Serismo aspect of Cholismo that I had kind of discounted how stressful 4-3 could be as opposed to 1-0. I'd gotten so used to 1-0 and 2 that these back and forth roller coasters and the yet another remontada Atletico had to launch. It's stressful in its own right, but a win is a win. Atletico are back into the top four for the time being, and we'll take it. 3 points and move on.
Absolutely. I mean, let's start from the beginning. I mean, Luis Suarez had a penalty saved, and then Atleti went 2-0 up. And then Getafe had a couple of penalties of their own. They went 3-2 ahead. And then Correa scored his second of the game to make it 3-3. And that was just half time. I mean, what a crazy first half. Can you remember a first half like that?
No, genuinely, I can't. I was thinking that during the game, like, this is just insane. This is totally bonkers. A 6-goal first half. And even funnier is that Getafe had not scored a goal on Atletico in over a decade until this season. And now they put up 4 in the 2 meetings between the 2 teams this year and 3 in the first half on Saturday at the Metropolitano. Yeah, I can't remember first half, at least in the Simeone era, that was as crazy as that. Just wild. And that goal before halftime turned out to be so, so important for Atletico to get entering the halftime locker room and to come back out in the second half knowing that you can restart from zero.
Yeah, it was kind of just a reset and a breather. I'm probably not sure Simeone's ever had a more chaotic halftime scene talk than the one he would have had in this game. So then to the second half, and it gets worse for Atleti because Felipe sent off. I mean, some fans would argue that may have been better, but down to 10, down to 10 they were. And then finally, despite being down to 10 for so long, they find a winner, and it's Mario Hermoso yet again.
Yet again. Yeah, he's the man for the occasion right now, isn't he? The goal against Valencia that won Atletico that game, and the overhead kick, of course, that wins this game against Getafe. Yeah, Hermoso, I wrote about this last night on the Calderon when I was doing my column after the game. And Hermoso is such a weird player because he's immensely frustrating to watch as a defender, but he plays with this confidence, borders on cockiness. That means he's always going to believe in himself. And it is as likely to create moments like the game winner against Getafe as it is to create moments where he's giving away needless, nonsensical penalties. Really, really something else.
I mean, yeah, that performance at Camp Nou last week was pretty horrific against Adama.
Yeah.
And but sandwiching that, he has winning goals in a 3-2 win over Valencia and a 4-3 win over Getafe. So yeah, it must be very hard for fans to kind of work out where they stand with him. And it's kind of, sometimes when you get these performances and these players, it's kind of like this weird kind of bond develops because they're generally bad, but they have these iconic moments of brilliance, which brings such euphoria to teams. I mean, in general, Atleti's defence, I mean, we have to talk about it. They conceded more goals already this season now than in any other Simeone season, and we're only in mid-February. Yep. We've spoken about this many times on the podcast with other guests and yourself. How do you assess it right now?
Lost cause, at least for this season. The way Atletico are going to win games this season is just by outscoring other teams. That's just the way it is. The plantilla is imbalanced. We've talked about it on my podcast, Colchonero Chat, quite a bit. The squad is imbalanced. There have been absences and injuries and illness throughout the season. And Simeone has tried to find solutions, hasn't found any. He's probably not going to find any. So the best course of action for Atletico is to stack the deck full of attackers and let it ride. You know, 5, 6, 7 goal thrillers. That's the way Atletico are going to get top four this season. That's their best shot, at least. I know the club made a moderate investment in January, bringing in Reinildo Mandava and Daniel Voss, but Voss is going to be out for a few weeks with the knee injury, and Reinildo had a, at times, difficult debut against Barcelona, and his first start was against Getafe on Saturday, and he was a bit inconsistent up and down in that game as well. So just with the way that the squad is structured and just with the way it leans toward attacking players, with players of the second striker profile, and you have to accommodate players like Luis Suarez, there's really no solution to solve Atletico's defensive woes this year. They're going to let in 40, 50 goals. That's just the way it is. So if you're Diego Simeone, you need to think, how can I best position my team to score 3-4 goals most, if not every game? Because we're going to let in 2 or 3.
Yeah, it still takes some getting your head around, doesn't it, when you talk about Atletico Madrid in these terms.
It really does.
But you're absolutely right. This is the reality for them right now. Let's talk about some positives then. Well, one positive that they didn't want was, of course, that of Yannick Carrasco. A big loss for this game and, of course, for the next couple. They'll be hoping he's fit for the United game, I'm sure. But in terms of this performance, Angel Correa, he's MVP right now, no?
Best player of the season. He's been Atletico's best player, most consistent forward all year. He's got 14 total goal contributions in La Liga. His first double-digit goal season. I'm thrilled for him. It's been a long time coming for him. After several seasons where it looked like he could put it together, but ultimately immaturity and inconsistency held him back. This past calendar year, I'd say, give or take, he's been available. He's been consistent. He has shown a new dimension to his game I wasn't sure he was going to reach. And he's entering his prime, too, at 26, going on 27 in a few weeks. He's meant everything to Atletico this year. Cholo Simeone said after the game on Saturday that Angel is all heart. The team needs him and his goals. And he's got 10 of them now. Atletico are going to need a few more to hold off the teams chasing them for fourth.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a scrap. Do you think Atleti will hold on? Do you think they'll be able to finish in the top four?
Oh, it's a tough one. I kind of vacillate on this, depending on each individual match day, you know, partido a partido and all that. The Barcelona game was really damaging. They really could have used at least a point from Camp Nou. The Betis game coming up in a few weeks is going to be massive at the Via Marine. That could be third versus fourth if the table holds as it currently is. I think they will just about scrape it if they embrace the chaos, if they embrace these 3-2 and 4-3 games and Simeone stops trying to play the way his Atletico teams have played for the majority of the past decade, because this team just can't play like that. So if Cholo decides to take the shackles completely off and Atletico play more of these wild games, they could outscore enough teams to where maybe they do just edge it, but it's going to be tough. La Liga is very, very competitive this year, particularly those top 6, 7, 8 places. It's going to be really fierce in the upcoming weeks and months. So,
yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. So many big games to come ahead. Not least Manchester United in the Champions League. Just on my final question here, how do you assess that tie about 10 or so days away? Do you think Atleti are going to be looking forward to this, or do you think they're going to be kind of fearful?
I think they'll be looking forward to it. And I think Atletico have a great chance to beat United. Every leak I see coming out from this Man United team and how they're displeased with Ralph Rangnick and how they're displeased with their training sessions. And there's just chaos at an institutional level at Man United. So I think these teams have kind of similar issues, imbalanced squads, both squads potentially entering transitional eras this season into future seasons. I think it'll be pretty even, but I do think Atletico can absolutely win it, given United's weaknesses and Atletico's proclivity for punching above their weight in the Champions League against bigger teams with bigger histories, bigger reputations, etc. I think Atleti have a great shot, and they should not be afraid of this United team. Well, maybe Cristiano Ronaldo. That's probably the guy to be afraid of, obviously.
He does love a goal against Atleti, doesn't he? Well, thank you very much for your time. Make sure you follow Jeremy on Twitter, as well as Into the Calderon and the Colchonero Chat podcast. Thanks very much for your time, Jeremy. A quite remarkable game then in Madrid on Saturday night, and it was followed up by an equally chaotic game on Sunday in Catalonia. It was the Derby de Barcelona, Espanyol against Barcelona. And, well, Rory, you said Barca nearly took the gloss off your enjoyment from last weekend. They salvaged the point in the 96th minute. Luke de Jong once again with a crucial goal. It started so well with the early goal, but then Espanyol came from behind to lead 2-1. And it felt like they were on the way to victory, didn't it?
It did a wee bit, yes. Certainly, I think by the time we got to that Luke de Jong equaliser, we weren't convinced that Barcelona were going to sort of turn it around and manage to take away a point. I think the fact that both managers came out after this match and both said that they deserved to win the match gives you some feeling that this was a fairly even match all the way through. But yeah, it was a tight game. It was intense. And in terms of a derby, it's probably exactly what you want. 4 goals, 2 red cards, and plenty of chaos.
Yeah, I think the Espanyol fans would have enjoyed Pique getting his marching orders in particular. But which performance from a Barca perspective stood out for you most? Was it Adama with another assist for him, or the midfield, perhaps Pedri again, Gavi playing well?
I thought Adama was very good. He was consistently a threat, and you could see that he wasn't quite as effective in the second half, but he constantly had Pedrosa on toast, to be honest. He just couldn't quite deal with him. He was very good. I think for Barcelona, Gavi was incredible against Aleix Vidal in the first half as well. Again, Aleix Vidal just could not cope with him. And you saw Aleix Vidal got a free kick in the first half for a sort of physical confrontation, but Gavi several times left him on the floor. For Barcelona, I think this was an interesting game. I do think that they were perhaps unfortunate. If we take this in conjunction with the other game in the first half of the season, I think Barcelona were pretty fortunate to win that game and got away with some. I think in this game, overall, if I look at the chances, I didn't think Espanyol created too much. And it's true that they were pretty stout in the second half. They compacted well, and Barcelona couldn't really work out quite how to get through until they brought on the lighthouse that is Luke de Jong, providing the light, shining the way forward for Barcelona and Xavi. But yeah, overall, I think Barcelona, they had a good first half. And in the first half, they worked out their game plan fairly well. It obviously helps when you go ahead so early in the game. But yeah, I thought they managed to stretch Espanyol pretty well in the first half. I thought they found a bit of space. There's still a few kinks to work out, certainly. And I think if you look at the difference between this performance and the one we saw against Atleti last week, more or less it comes down to effectiveness in front of goal. And the other factor it's Dani Alves. I mean, he was the difference in midfield last week, and he gave Barcelona so much superiority and so much control there. Whereas this week, it's not his role, so we can't be too critical of him. But Serginho Dest, more or less, was anonymous on the park today.
Perhaps another one of those kinks that you might want to refer to is perhaps Eric Garcia. His defending for Espanyol's second goal wasn't the greatest. From a Pedro point of view, it was really nice to see Sergi Dader getting a goal and an assist after this week when he's been doing his interviews with Sid Lowe, talking about his mental health challenges that he's had. So it was nice to see him play so well, and what a goal it was. RDT also with a goal and assist to dovetail very well with him. But yeah, any final thoughts on it from an Espanyol perspective, Rory? I know you love them so much.
Tongue well and truly bitten there. But
just no, like Gary.
As I say, I think Espanyol, I think Moreno almost got it right in this game, what he should have done. I think they pressed up fairly high in the first half, and I thought although they did get stretched in that first half, in the second half they were much more compact, they managed the game much better, and I think they were more aggressive in this match than they were in the first. And in the first match you could see that Barcelona were maybe there for the taking a bit more, whereas in the second match I maybe would have been more compact as they were in the first, if anyone is still following which match I'm talking about. But yeah, I think for the games, that the way they came and the way Barcelona were in both fixtures, I think Moreno should have swapped his game plans around, in my personal opinion.
Interesting. Well, we'll leave it there for now because we have plenty more matches to talk about. Not least, Real Sociedad, who are finding goals very hard to come by, but they managed to score two against Granada on Sunday afternoon to move into sixth position. So now they're only 1 point behind Atleti and just, also behind Barça as well, both on 39, Barça Atleti. So yeah, Mikel Oyarzabal once again, very important for the club, as always seems to be the case. Rory, Rafinha with a goal too. Do you think Real Sociedad can still challenge for Europe, or do you think this is just kind of a good result amid some less so good results?
I think in terms of the Champions League, I would be fairly surprised if they managed to maintain a strong challenge. I mean, today they got the goals and Captain Fantastic turned up for them. And Real Sociedad, as good as they are, they're very good in between the two boxes in terms of how they play. They create a lot of chances. They're a very well-rounded football team, but they do lack a punch up front. And today they managed to get those goals, and it opened up a bit once Oyarzabal gets a penalty. Again, it's a penalty for a handball in the box. It's not exactly...
Your favourite.
Yeah, they've not exactly ripped Granada open there. Yeah, I think this was a very typical Real Sociedad performance of the last 3-4 months, where they might win, but it's a bit of a toss-up as to whether they can get that first goal. And from there, that kind of dictates the match, in my view.
Yeah, well, an all-important 3 points for them. And they'll look now to the Europa League and, of course, that massive derby with an in-form Athletic. Athletic, by the way, play on Monday night there against Mallorca. So that's why we haven't spoken about them yet. Next up in the European race is, of course, Real Betis. They continue their flying form. It seems like very much a blip last week against Villarreal, but they continued their hot streak in front of goal. Another 4 goals against Levante. They're in third, 4 points clear of Barca. It's the 9th time they've scored 4 goals in a game, Rory. You've written about them extensively. Again, it's another impressive performance, wasn't it?
Madre mia. Nabil Fekir was absolutely red hot today. It was the tricks that he was bringing around, the flicks. It was kind of like watching Ronaldinho on his day. Like he was really very good today. And I think, I mean, pinch of salt here was Levante, and yeah, they didn't cover themselves in glory. I saw a very good tweet today. I saw my 10-year-old daughter standing up today, yelling at the players, telling them to run more. This was from a Levante fan, obviously, which yeah, that's a pretty damning assessment, and he went on to say that was the saddest moment of his footballing fandom. But yeah, Betis red hot again. They were so good today in terms of going forward. I think they got a bit lax in terms of defending, but yeah, William Carvalho again, another fantastic performance. And Betis are a team with mojo. I mean, they might not be perfect, they give up a few goals here and there, but in terms of a team that really, once they're sort of working together and once they're feeling it, there's very few teams that I'd rather watch in La Liga or in Europe, in fact.
Well, we'll see in Europe, because they travel to St. Petersburg to face Zenit in their Europa League playoff match. That comes up on Thursday. Well, that'll do for part one. We've had a look at the European race. After the break, we'll touch a lot more on the title race and a little bit of development at the bottom of the table, so stay tuned.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown, our Matchday 24 recap podcast. We're now looking at the title race. Last weekend, it was a bit of movement. We had Sevilla failing to beat Osasuna and then Real Madrid overcoming Granada with that Marco Asensio thunderbolt. This weekend, it took another twist. Sevilla were the winners on Friday night, and then it was Real Madrid who were unable to beat Villarreal. So for more on that game, let's get the thoughts of our resident Madridista, Hassan Karim. Hassan, what was your takeaway from this game?
Exactly what I expected, to be honest. We always struggle away to Villarreal, so that was no surprise. To quote Zidane's favourite word, we suffered in the first half, as always. And I thought we put a good account of ourselves in the second. If we were a bit luckier, I reckon we could have walked away with 3 points in that. But yeah, we don't often pick up a result away to Villarreal, so it wasn't awfully surprising that it was a bit of a slog.
Yeah, it's five consecutive draws in La Liga at La Salamica. It seems to be the ground where you just can't win at the moment. Some interesting teams, some very intriguing team selection from Carlo Ancelotti. Gareth Bale made a rare appearance, his first since August, and he played quite well, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a bit of a ghost for the majority of the first half, to be honest. Started to show a little bit of life toward the end of the first, and then in the second was very good. I was very happy with what he put forward. I'd say out of most of the players on the team that were playing that day, he was probably one of the better ones. Almost pulled off quite a nice goal as well. Was just a bit unlucky there, but generally speaking, yeah, very good account of himself in that, in a sort of unfamiliar role. So you know, I wasn't too disappointed in what I saw there, because you never quite knew what to expect, but yeah, it was a good performance from him generally.
I mean, Carletto threw everything at it. Jovic came on, Rodrigo came on, and then Eden Hazard came on, who seems to be even further down the pecking order by the week. Jovic hit the post right at the end. Do you think a draw was a fair result? Because Villarreal had their chances too. Thibaut Courtois was in fine form.
Yeah, I think a draw was a fair result. I don't think we did enough to win the game. I don't think we also played bad enough to lose it, if that makes sense, at the same time. So yeah, I think a sharing of the point was more than fair enough for both sides, given that it was definitely a game of two halves.
Well, after last week, saw the lead extend to 6 points. This week, it was cut again to 4. How do you see the title race as it stands right now?
I mean, to be honest, I've been for the longest time saying that, you know, it'll be a case of like similar to how we had La Real a couple of seasons ago, where they were sort of in the running up until about this point and then kind of fell off. I thought Sevilla might do the same thing, but they just seem to be churning the results out, and I think Lopetegui feels like he's got a point to prove still. So I can see them being in it right up until the gritty end. But I think we should have just enough quality to squeak it out.
Seems to be the way it's going at the moment. Quite a few drop points lately for Real Madrid. There was that Getafe defeat, a few draws in there as well. And of course, the big absence has been Karim Benzema. In the three games since he's been injured, they've only scored one goal, and that was Marco Asensio's thunderbolt against Granada. How much of a, obviously an absence, but just could you quantify how much of an absence he is for the team?
Well, he contributes to pretty much, I think the best way to explain this is pretty much the four forwards that we fielded in the game against Villarreal all bring something that Benzema brings by himself. So, you know, the ability to link up, the ability to score, you know, to beat players and that kind of thing, those collectively bring that. So the fact that you lose one player who brings all of that by himself shows just how big a player he is. He's essentially like having an extra three players in a way.
Very hard to replace, as you say, yeah. A big one. And of course, next up for Real Madrid is that long-awaited, much-anticipated clash with Paris Saint-Germain in Paris. Karim is in the squad, isn't he? But is he going to be fit?
From what I've read and the reports that are lurking around, I think he's going to be expected to feature for some portion of it at least. Around an hour or so is what the common sort of consensus seems to be. But if it's enough to get through, then it's enough to get through. That's all that matters. I mean, we've seen half-fit Benzema turn up in a big game before, that Atletico game where he scored a wonderful goal in that game as well. So if he's done it once, he can do it again.
Absolutely, yeah. Very bullish from you. We spoke a little bit off-air about Madrid's chances and how you're feeling ahead of the tie. Obviously, there's Messi, Ramos if he's fit. There's a lot of connections. Kylian Mbappe, no less. How do you see this tie going? How do you feel about it?
I still feel like we're favourites just because I feel PSG collectively are a bit of a mess. I don't feel like they've got the ability to control games with their midfield because I don't feel they've got enough genuinely class midfielders outside of Verratti. I feel that their forward line is still very disjointed. You know, unless you can, if you can keep Mbappe quiet, I think by and large you sort of mute them quite considerably. Because Messi is, you know, obviously he's still Messi is Messi. That's not going to change. But he's not quite hit the ground running at PSG. And I've still yet to see a game where I'm really like, yeah, he's really getting into gear now. But I just think PSG as a whole, they seem a bit of a mess. And I think Real Madrid collectively have been very good this season. You know, we've been able to grind out results when we need to. And then they can also really string things together and really put great team efforts together as well. So I think we should have too much quality collectively to sort of deal with PSG's individuals. But then there's also individual battles. Hakimi versus Vinicius is the big one. And I think Vinicius is going to have probably too much space to play with in that game to not be a nuisance.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating all across the pitch, of course. And we're looking forward to that one very much. But yeah, as for now then, Real Madrid 4 points clear at the top of the table. Cheers, Haas. I'm sure we'll all be watching that game, PSG against Real Madrid this week. We won't better take our eyes off that. Back onto La Liga title race now. And on Friday night, it was Sevilla who knew they had to win this game to make sure they kept the pressure on Real. And Lopetegui's team selection showed that. He was very much attacking. He not so much of a defensive midfielder as he usually does. He really went for it. But it took a while for them to find the breakthrough. Rory, it was simply a case of must win, did win, job done, move on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it looked as if we were sort of grinding towards another of those very costly draws that they had been picking up recently. And yeah, they got the breakthrough, but I think that was, yeah, a product of Lopetegui actually going for it and putting out an attacking lineup. If you look at the goal that Papu scores, there's two runners that come past him and they take away the outside players. They open up the shot for Papu, who has the freedom because he's playing further forward. He's playing in the middle where he wants to be. And that is where the goal comes from. So yeah, credit to Lopetegui for changing, for being ambitious. And I think it was vital that they got the win. You could see the celebrations, the way that the Sanchez-Pizjuan erupted, how important this was to Sevilla. I've got a lot of respect for Lopetegui in general because he obviously gets the results and he's turned Sevilla into a team that, for me, is overperforming their resources. There's no doubt about that. But I think he's done that from a point of sort of consistent conservatism and the ability to change and to move slightly away from what's got you that success and find that sort of extra gear and find that ambition to try and go against Madrid in this title race. I think the degree to which he does that and the degree to which he manages that is going to be key for them in this running.
Interesting. Yeah, I might just disagree there in terms of the overachieving part. I think they do have one of the best squads in the league. And I think given that they have had all these injuries, if they had all those players available for the whole time, I think they could have even been arguably level with Madrid at this point, even if they are just only 4 points behind. I mean, yeah, personally, I think they have a very well-equipped squad, maybe lacking that number nine, but they've addressed that. They brought in Martial. So, yeah, we'll see. They've got another big few games ahead. They've got the doubleheader against Dinamo Zagreb in the Europa League. They've got Espanyol away next, followed by the home derby, which could be every bit as eruptive as the previous one. So, yeah, a big month ahead for Lopetegui's side. That's the title race. One game which is kind of in the mid-table at the moment is Rayo against Osasuna. Osasuna, big winners here, 3-0. Rayo, well, the Bucaneros behind the goal either weren't allowed in or protested and didn't turn up. And the team, unfortunately, kind of followed that trend. They didn't really show up in this game. It's now three defeats in a row for them. That's the first time that's happened under Iraola. Rory, I think you love Oscar Trejo. He made some comments on social media today. Do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, he came out and said that essentially the club, that the way they're going on the pitch is totally different from the way the club is going in general. And he said that the club is against basically all of its staff. And he included in that sort of the youth teams and the ladies team there. And yeah, it's a bit of a grim situation there. I think if you haven't read up on it, there's plenty of good articles online about what's going on at Rayo. And yeah, you have to give Oscar Trejo credit because he's been at Rayo as long as anyone. He's been there a good sort of 10 years now. It must be verging on at least. And he is leading that club as a captain should, and making those sort of strong statements. It's brave because he's out of contract at the end of the season, I believe. I think Rayo have an option to extend it if they stay up, but they might not take that option. And so, yeah, It's pretty brave of him. Oscar Valentin also came out and tweeted his support for Oscar Trejo, backed him up. And so, yeah, they said that regardless of what's happening on the pitch, it's more important what's happening off the pitch at Rayo Vallecano. And, yeah, it feels like we're coming to a point of either revolution or where the sort of the dissonance will be crushed by the regime of Presa. So it'll be interesting times ahead. But yeah, they've given us a lot of joy this season, so I hope that things take a turn for the better.
Yeah, it's spiraling and boiling up to a point where it could get quite messy. But as you say, all power to Oscar Trejo for speaking out. Osasuna, incidentally, move into the top half, move above Rayo, and they are the third best side on the road in La Liga this season. Only Real Madrid and Betis have taken more points than them on the road, so very impressive from their point of view. Now we'll turn to the bottom. Obviously, Levante beaten again. They are now 12 points adrift, and frankly, we've probably given up on them. Alaves are the big winners of the weekend. They won 2-1 against Valencia. It was Mendilibar's first win back at Alaves. Rory, we don't need to say how important this is, do we?
Yes, absolutely massive for Mendy, for Mendilibar and Alaves. This win keeps them sort of within touching distance. It gives them a lot of momentum going forward, I think, because although Mendy had come in, and I do think that they were decent enough under him, they've got a few couple good draws, they've not quite sparked into life, so to speak. And so to get that first win, get that out of the way, it means they can look forward and, yeah, not be thinking about how long it's been since they've won a match, so to speak.
Mm. Yeah, good to get out of the way before they travel to the Bernabeu next. So yeah, as you say, they're touching distance now, 3 points behind Mallorca. Mallorca have games in hand, but that's no guarantee, of course, that they will win those. And also this weekend, Cadiz drawing with Celta. Cadiz are 19th, 1 point further back from Alaves. So they are still not out of it either, still fighting hard. But they are still yet to win at home. And I think I tweeted this, if you're not winning your home games, it's very hard to make the argument to stay up, isn't it?
Yes, and this was an interesting game. Santi Mina obviously missed a penalty with about 10 minutes to go, I believe it was. Conan Ledesma committed the foul, then managed to save it. It was a bit of a soft pen, but I think Celta USA and Morris, one of our contributors, was very frustrated with Chacho Caledet that they did not go for this more. And for the life of me, I can't understand why Celta weren't more ambitious in this match, because it was there for the taking and it would have put them sort of on the fringes of the European race. Cadiz, on the other hand, I do think they came out with an attacking lineup and they were solid, but they forced a couple good saves, it should be said, from Di Toro, but like you say, they need to find a way to get goals, because if they're not scoring, they're not winning.
Absolutely right. Yeah, and just to touch back on Celta, as you say, Iago Aspas taken off before that penalty, so of course he wasn't on the pitch to be able to take that spot kick, and of course Santi Mina had it saved. So yeah, that was the first game of Saturday, and it was quite forgettable, I think it's fair to say. Well, on that note, that brings us to the end of the recap of the matches. So now it's time for MVP, of course. Well then, Rory, let's get into MVP. Your first pick is from Friday night.
Yeah, I'm going with Ivan Rakitic, because we've been perhaps sort of underwhelmed last season by him, but I think this season he's really come into his own again as Sevilla captain. And this game, Sevilla were without Fernando, which is, again, I've spoken wonders of him recently, but they didn't miss him too much this game, and they went more attacking. So they only had the two of them in there, Juan Jordan and Rakitic. And I thought Rakitic was, despite the fact that he was probably the most defensive of the midfielders, he still gave him quite a driving force going forward. He had a couple of really good shots, and he sort of managed this team well through the game. And yeah, his leadership on and off the pitch for Sevilla is a massive deal for them, I think. And his know-how, that will come up big for them. And it did in this game, in my personal view. I know he didn't get the winner or anything, but in terms of performance, I thought he was a real cool head in the engine room.
Yeah, nice for him to put in a good performance after missing that penalty last week. My first pick, Jeremy's already said plenty about Correa himself, but I am going to go with Angelito. Just Simeone's basically a clone on the pitch almost. He fights so hard, he runs all day, and he produces the goods. He's Atleti's top scorer in the league, 10 goals, 4 assists on top of that as well. I mean, where would they be without him? I mean, they'd be trying to shoehorn in, you know, Suarez, Jean-Felix Cunha. They've got plenty of attackers, but it's still Angel Correa who is the most dependable. And Jeremy said it better than I can, but without a doubt, he's deserving of this with his brace on Saturday night. Speaking of a player banging form and with a brace, you've gone for someone as well from the other side of Seville.
Yeah, well, Nabil Fekir, I mean, I spoke about him earlier, but he is just on fire. And I think somebody noted it earlier on Twitter that he is really sort of making his case for player of the season, maybe behind Benzema and Vinicius, but he's certainly gaining ground, because he's part of that sort of duo with Canales that drive this Betis team forward, but he didn't have his sort of partner in arms this game, and he was still just as good as ever. I think Levante just didn't know how to cope with him, and it was a joy. I mean, as I say, I think both teams kind of gave up on defending to a certain extent in the second half, but it was worth it just to watch Fekir, just to watch him sort of having fun, playing with complete freedom, knowing the result was kind of more or less safe. And people say always watch Betis, but a large part of that reason is to watch Nabil Fekir.
Totally agree. My second pick is from the Catalan derby, and I could have gone with Ronaldo Tomás, but to be fair, he's likely to come up a lot more than the one I have chosen, and that is Sergi Darder. I touched on it before. He's been in the news this week with his interview speaking about his difficulties that he's had and how he struggled to kind of come to terms with that. But on Sunday night on the pitch, he was just phenomenal. He was leading that midfield. He was a real leader on the pitch. A fantastic goal, the equalising goal. Is brilliant. You said it was Messi-esque, didn't you, I think, on Twitter. Fabulous. Cut inside, bending it beyond Ter Stegen at full stretch. Just a fantastic goal. You have to see that if you haven't already. And then, of course, he goes and sets up Ronaldo Tomás for the goal, which put them ahead in the game. And, you know, we talk about the defending from Eric Garcia, maybe, but it was a fantastic ball over the top and right into Ronaldo Tomás's path. So, yeah, for me, that goal assist, all-round performance, symbolised everything that the Espanyol fans would want in a derby. Well, there we go. That's MVP done. Now it's moments of the weekend to round us off. Rory, what was your moment?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a bit of a weird one here. It's not a goal. It's not a particular sort of play. It's Luka Jovic's chip right at the end of the Villarreal Real Madrid game, because it wasn't even a bad finish, but like he chips the keeper and there's at least sort of, it feels like 3-4 seconds of everyone just sort of holding their breath, waiting to see where it drops. It hits the bar. Obviously, Nacho gets to the rebound and it's cleared off the line, but that sort of suspense, which is going to, I thought that was quite like a universal experience of everyone watching that game. Obviously, anyone who's invested in the European race, in the title race, or just in general, in the narrative of the game, everyone's sort of hanging on that ball dropping and it hits the bar. And I just thought that sort of collective experience of everyone sort of, yeah, being on the edge of the seat, holding their breath, that was kind of my favourite moment, because it was terrific entertainment. You can't beat it.
Fabulous, fabulous stuff. Well, for me, again, we could have gone with Mario Hermoso, but I'm going to go with the one we've only just seen a couple of hours ago. Luke de Jong, how many important goals does this man score? It's almost become a meme in itself now. 10 headed goals now for Barca this season as well, more than any other side, which is, again, unthinkable. But it happened again. Adama's cross, 96th minute of the game, in a derby, 2-1 down. Espanyol on the verge of euphoria. Hadn't beaten Barca since 2009, hadn't beaten them at home since 2007, hadn't come from behind to beat them since 1954. But no, Luke de Jong said, no, I'm going to head this ball in the back of the net. And with that, that is the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks to Jeremy and to Haas for their contributions earlier in the show. We do hope you'll continue to follow us at La Liga Lowdown on Twitter. Keep across all of our content there. We've got a big week in Europe ahead. Obviously, PSG, Real Madrid is the headline. We've got plenty more too on Thursday as the Europa League playoff round begins. So stay tuned across all of that. Enjoy your week. Hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Thanks again, Rory. And we'll see you again soon. Take care. Español, ahí prácticamente dentro del campo, el remate, gol, 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 mira, Luke de Jong, gol, mira, hombre, Luke de Jong, gol, ¿dónde están los que decían? Ahí, aquí está. ¡Gol! Ay, qué mal defendido, Luke de Jong, look, 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 look. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.